conversation, just like now you're
Okay. So we've, the weeks that I've been here anyways, we've been discussing Agarata. So I figured today we'll do an Agarata I like teaching, and I'll expand on it a bit, which deals with Yosef, since we're in the parshiot of Yosef. What?
Are we going to break into song?
Eli,
there with me?
I'm not going to. I know the songs, but I don't. But singing it is for me at least is a bad idea. My parents used to take me that play every year for a very long time, so I know the songs very well. But
open,
that doesn't
open
that
door.
That doesn't necessarily help my my vocal skills. Okay, but before we as I've done in the last few weeks, in addition to just studying individual Agadot, I like pointing out sort of methodological issues within the study of Agadah. So before we look at the Agadah I want to focus on, I want to look at a small piece of a long tshuva by the Radbaz. I mean, number one. So the Radbaz is dealing with a cryptic statement in... a cryptic statement in... Misachat Sofrim, and that appears also in the Yerushalmi, that if you, that really speaks quite harshly about anyone who wants to write down Agadot, which the questioner asks, does that mean that the Yerushalmi or the Misachat Sofrim has a negative opinion of Agadah? To which he says, no, that's not the case. We have a very high opinion of Agadah. The problem is simply that they didn't want them originally written down because then they would not be interpreted properly, because when they're oral, so they can be given to... just pass this down. If they're oral, they can be passed down only to the right people, and they can be explained once they're written. So, once things are written, it can get to anybody anywhere, and that's dangerous. So he, in that context, he writes, Da, ki yesh b'agadah davar niglev v'nistar. All agadot, all narrative literature, non-halachic literature, and chazal, they have a hidden level, and they have a revealed level. Vaniglem Moshechet Alev, the simple meaning, it is right. Moshechet Alev, it's attractive, it inspires, it's a story. Vanistar Lo Natan Elo LaYodim Chein, but the hidden level is only given to those who LaYodim Chein. They know the secrets of whatever exactly. Or this is always the thing. Whenever you see secrets in Chazal, so whatever you think the secrets of the universe are, just plug that in. If you're a philosopher, it's philosophy. If you're a Kabbalist, it's Kabbalah. Whatever that is, v'heim kiv shono shel olam v'ra'ui lahastiram. Right, these are the things that are worth being hidden. Mimi she'ino ra'ui lahem, from those who should not, who are not worthy for them. Dechtiv dvash v'chalav tachat lishonech. And this is a drasha in general that is used to describe Agadah, that it is honey and milk under your tongue. So under your tongue, meaning it's right. It's not what you say. Openly, but it's what's a little bit hidden. Vim Kane, he says, if that's the case, that there's a hidden layer to Agadah, so Akotev Agadata or Ador Shabi Rabim, if you either write it down or you expound it publicly, Ra'ui La'onesh Gadol, you should be punished. Mimanev Shachim Akorei B'Sefer or Ashomea Drashahu Amaretz Nimshach Achar Pshat Agadah. He said, for one of two reasons, because if the person listening or understanding it is not educated, so then he's just going to follow the simple meaning. V'lo yilmod shum limud acher, and he won't learn anything deeper. Ukvar yidak yagmara mivia liyad maaseh, v'imu rasha yitlotzez al divrei rabotenu zal. And if he's a simpleton, so he won't get anything out of it. And if he's someone who looks to mock Chazal, so then he will, right? If you start talking about the hyperbolic miracles that are described in all the Midrashim on these week's Parshiot, so if someone wants to be cynical about Chazal, you're just opening it up, right? It's if, you know, you see this. If someone who is a bit cynical about Midrashim sits down and just opens up a little Midrash says, right? They just sit there sort of snickering, right? But without anyone there to interpret it and explain what the hyperbole is doing, right? It just sounds wild. He says, "V'im hu mevin k'tzat, yomar efshar ledavar ha'pashut hazeh, Kivain bala ma'amar v'yachshov machshavot b'lti amitiyot asher lo alu alev bala ma'amar."
Didn't you say it's even if they say it verbally?
What? Publicly, right? Right, because then they don't have a chance in a small group. You can clarify. Right. But he's saying, okay. Right? So he said, either birabim, birabim. Right, exactly. Right. So he says, either if you write it or you give it in like a 1,000-person lecture, so there's going to be no chance for clarification. He says, or someone will understand it a little bit. He'll realize that there's something going on, but, you know, the way he'll interpret it will be untrue. It won't be the intent of the statement at all. Kasheri Rabbi Da wrote Elu Shosin Mamari Chazal Perushim Asher Lokain, and he looks around him. The Radbaz looks around and he sees that people are doing this all the time. V'im hu matchil bechokma amitid yadem miderech haseicha basher hin lo rav mare lo aderech yishkon or. And he said it'll be worse, right? Because someone may have had certain knowledge of truth, and then he'll see an agadah, he'll see a midrash that he doesn't understand, and it'll lead him away from the truth because it'll be so wild, it'll be so off base. It'll be worse. But he said when things are given individually or maybe in small groups, so then you can clarify, then you can make sure that people understand. I'm out here. Was there another one being passed around, or is everything? No, okay. So he says, Nimtza Zakoteva Gadao Dorshabir Abim, Notain Sodot Elokim, Ushmotav Doshim Midras Laptaim, Varoilanesh Gadol. So therefore, one who writes down Agadah or says it too publicly, he gives the secrets of God and his names to be trampled by foolish people, Varoilanesh Gadol should be punished. Vashomam Enu Mekabal Schar, Shareinu Mevin, Ela Pshatei Advarim, and one who hears it doesn't get reward because he only understands the simple level, Vitova Elishmodra, Sharatini. And if you're going to understand things simply, so understand halacha, right? If you're not going to have a chance to really understand things, so go to a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch Shir and let someone just tell you what to do. Okay, so you won't understand it at a deep level, but fine. And then, after the ellipsis, he says, okay, so Chazal hid things in the Agadah, but how did they do it? What's the code, right? How do you decode it? So one of the ways he tells you is, v'lo katvua sefer ba'anpei nafshei. They didn't write Agadot as a single book. El mamarim mufuzarim b'gmara. One of the things they did to hide it, but also to enable you to decode it, is that they scattered it. Right, a little bit here, a little bit there. K'dei shemisha ein yodei asod ha-mamar yistapek b'sipur ha-agadah v'yanuach sechlo ma'ad b'pilpul ha-gmara. So that someone who isn't capable of really understanding it, so he'll just understand what's in front of him. You see one part of it. But one who knows secrets, they'll start piecing together the puzzle, and they'll see the secrets. Right. So one level of the code, the Radbaz suggests, is that Agadot need to be understood in context. So what Chazal did was they divided it up a little bit. So if you read one piece, you'll get something out of it, but you won't see the secrets. But if you piece it together, right, you'll get a fuller picture.
So what about the Midrash Rabba, Midrash Tanchuma, all those, it's a kind of...
Right, so he seems to be addressing the Agadot and the Gemara, but even the Midrashim there, right, you know, they're not...
It's collected like a book.
Right, they're collected like a book, but even there, right, to fully understand them, right, a lot of them, right, it's like a... You know, a lot of them are p'tichdot, right? They're just the beginning of a particular drasha on the parsha. You'll have multiple. But like a full concept, but you're right. The midrashim are a bit, a little bit less like that. They're also a little bit less cryptic, right? The agadot are a bit more cryptic. The midrashim are, but the agadot for sure, the midrashim, right? Again, to fully understand them, you may need a broader perspective, but definitely they are more localized. Okay. So the Gemara we're going to focus on is not, I would say, particularly, I don't think it hides deep Kabbalistic secrets in it. I mean, maybe it does, and I have no idea. I never claimed to be the Yodei Chen. But I do think that to understand it fully, we need to do two things, right? One is we need to use literary analysis to understand what's wrong in the Agadah, what it's pointing us at. And then we need to piece together a fuller perspective from other places in Chazal. So this is the Gemara that I call the rich, the poor, and the evil. Right? Which already from that, you should realize that there's something wrong. But that's literally how the Agadah begins. So this is a Gemara about why people have no excuses to not engage in Torah study. So the Gemara in Yoma says as follows: Tana Rabbanan, ani v'ashir v'rasha bayin ladin. You have a poor person, a wealthy person, an evil person, and they come to judgment. Now, right off the bat, right, you should realize that the key to the Agadah lies in that first sentence, because there's an obvious lack of, right?
Comparison.
Yeah, right. There's a lack of parallelism, right? Two of those make sense, right? Rich and poor are descriptors without judgment.
One of these right? things is not like
exactly, right? The odd man out here is obviously Russia. And that, I think, is going to be the key to understanding everything that goes on in this. So let's keep that in mind as we go through. So there are three units. La'ani omrim lo. So if a poor person comes in and he says, or God says to him, Mipnei ma lo asakta b'Torah. Right, why didn't you study Torah? So he says, Im omer, ani ayiti v'tarud b'mezonotai. Omrim lo, klum ani ayita yoter mi hilel. So if he says, look, I was poor. I worked 16-hour days. I worked 18-hour days to scrape together enough food to live. I didn't have time to learn. I didn't have the luxury. It's like Fiddler on the Roof, right? Like Fiddler on the Roof, right? I wish if I were a rich man. So then, right, the sweetest thing of all is that I would learn the holy books with the rabbi. But what can I do? Right, I'm Tevye the milkman, right? I can't learn. So they say to him, that's very nice you were the milkman, it's very nice you were poor, but you weren't poorer than Hillel. Right? You weren't poorer than Hillel, and Hillel managed to learn Torah. How do I know you weren't poorer than Hillel? So Amru Olav al Hillel Azakeim, Shebechol Yom Vayom Ayoseu Mistaker B'Tarpik. Each day he managed to scrape together a small coin, and half of that he would use to provide meager sustenance to his family, and the other half he would pay the guard on the Beit Midrash to let him in, right, to pay tuition. So pamachat lo matzali listaker v'lo nichu shomer Beit Midrash likanes. One time he didn't have that much money, so they didn't let him in.
Oh, is this the roof story?
This is the roof story. Yeah. Right, the roof story. It's a well-known story.
Yeah.
Right? Alav v'nitle v'yashav al-pi aruba k'dei shishma divrei Elokim chayim m'pi shmaya v'avtalion. So he goes up and he climbs onto the roof to hear divrei Elokim chayim, right? Again, right, either the words of the living God or the living words of God, which that line is obviously an allusion to Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, which is a much more famous, they're both pretty famous, agadot. So Amru, and they say, Oto haya hayom erev Shabbat haya, utkuva tevet haita. Right, that was a Friday in the winter, right about now. V'yarad alav shalig min hashamayim, and it snowed. Presumably he did not live in Madian. Does it, or this area, does it ever snow? Does it ever snow here? No, right? No, no. Really? It's amazing. It's just amazing. It's amazing. The difference is crazy. It's crazy. This morning, it was 6 degrees in Efrat. And like...
It snows in Sfat.
Well, yeah, so they're in the north. Presumably they're in the north. In the north it snows. Yeah, and, you know, in the Yerushalayim Vasviva. So this is presumably somewhere north. Or maybe... Kshala Murashachar, so in the morning, Amar Lo Shmai left, it's very comical also, right? Kshala Murashachar, Amar Lo Shmai left Talion, Aftalion Achi, Bechol Yom Abayit Meir, Vayom Afel, Shema Yom HaMeunanhu. You always have to wonder, right? Rav Yitzi Blau likes pointing that out, that the Gemara is trying, or the Gemara tries to be a bit comical, right? This is a bit slapstick, right? Right? So he looks to Avtali and he says, you know, it's normally very bright and today it's very dark. Maybe it's cloudy. Hitzitzu and a hand wrote the Muradam Barabas. They look up and instead of seeing clouds, they see the outline of a person on the sunroof. So Alu Matsu Alav Rom Shalosh Amot Shalek. They go up and they find something like, you know, 5-6 feet of snow on him, which is a lot, right? Even, right? That's a lot of snow. You know, once in my life.
Insulate, so it kept him
warm. Exactly, very warm. Once in my life have I ever, like, seen that much snow here. But, like, it's very, like, even if you get snow.
This is a little bit like, you know, the grandfather tells the kid, I have to walk
Oh, for sure.
To school in the snow, both ways.
Exactly. Right, exactly. I mean, look, admittedly, I did once have this in Yeshiva. I don't know if you remember that crazy storm. It was, 6 years ago? Oh, you didn't have it here, but 6 years ago, there was a crazy freak storm in November in the Yerushalayim area. And we had 3.5 feet of snow, and the drifts were 7 feet. It was crazy. And my parents were visiting, and they were staying in the guest apartments in Gush, which is like down the mountain, like down like the hill on the campus. And it was Shabbos, and like they were literally snowed in. Like I had to bring like four yeshiva guys, and we had to like pull them out. So like it does happen, but it's very rare. It's very rare. Of course, you know, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein got up. We didn't have electricity for 5 days, and like we're all stuck in. And he gets up there, and he's like, you know, some of you may be thinking you have an excuse not to learn, but then he references this Gemara, and he's like, look. So it's cold. You have nowhere to go. What else do you do in a Litvish yeshiva? You just learn. Like, you're not going anywhere. But he said, look, Hillel did it, right? We can do it too, right? So that obviously was the obvious image to invoke there. So they find him covered in 3 feet of snow. Parku, virchitzu, visichu, voshivu, kenegra medora. So obviously they take him down, they give him a shower, they anoint him, and they put him next to the fireplace, which is how we actually kept warm that time. We, you know, we found like the people who were there since the 60s, you know, like who drove with the, you know, their guns out of the window. They had big houses with fireplaces, so that was how we stayed warm. Amru ra'uy zeh lechalel alav et ha-shabbat. So they said, for this one, it is worth violating Shabbat. Now that is a very odd thing to say, right? It's a very odd thing to say. Presumably, the context there, and again, this is one of those, I didn't give you this Gemara, but presumably the background to that is that the Gemara in Yoma, when giving its arguments for why you can violate Shabbat to save someone's life, one of them is, Halel alav Shabbat acha, kidei shishmeru Shabbatot harbe. And violate one Shabbat so they'll keep future ones. Right? Which, at least at its simple value, you know, simple read, means that there's a conviction that if you save someone who normally keeps Shabbat, so it's good for like Torah observance overall, right? So in context, it makes sense. So he's saying, right, this person, if he's sacrificing that for Torah, clearly it's worth saving him, right? Now it's not totally clear whether this is happening on Shabbat or not. Right? It's not clear whether, right, this starts on Friday night and they actually were mechallel Shabbat for him, right? And this was on Shabbat and that's why he's saying it, or this was on a Friday, right? Like Thursday night into Friday. It may just be that this was Friday going into Shabbat. Which, you know, adds to that context. I should have divided this slightly differently. But, okay. But that's the poor person. He says, you have no excuse. Okay, so then we move to the rich person. Ashir omrim lo mebnei malo asakta b'tara. So now you turn to the rich person. So he says, im omer ashir ayiti v'tarud ayiti b'nechzai. If he says, look, so I had the opposite problem. I was too wealthy. I was a CEO. I had so many responsibilities. So then you say, "Omrim lo klum ashir ayita yoter mi Rabbi Elazar." Were you wealthier than Rabbi Elazar ben Charsom? Because Amru alav al Rabbi Elazar ben Charsom sheniach lo aviv elef ayirot biyabasha. Because it was said about him, his father left him 1,000 cities on land, connected elus finot bayam, and 1,000 ships. V'chol yom vayom notel note shel kemach haktefo mahalach miir leir midina lemedina lumot Torah. And yet, he would just go around with a little bit of flour on his shoulders, and he would learn Torah. Right? Meaning, he had a lot of wealth, he had a lot to take care of, and he decided to spend time learning Torah. Right? I always admire these people. Right? It's also a challenge; it's not a given. Right? There, you know, there are a few people like our, you know, good paradigms of this. Right? Like, do you know the podcast Headlines? You know Headlines? It's like a halacha podcast by Reb David Lichtenstein. So David Lichtenstein, he does this once a week, like Torah podcast, where he gives like a shiur, gets interviews. So he's also the CEO of the Lightstone Group. And he's worth personally $1.7 billion. But he likes giving shiur. So that's what he does, right? That's what he does. Or Tzvi Reisman. What? What? Lichtenstein. Lightstone is just a translation into English. So he's one of those people, and he, again, part of his goal is to teach people, look, you can be, you know, a very successful businessman. Obviously, he spends time doing business, otherwise you're not going to get that successful. And you can be a Talmud Chacham or Tzvi Reisman, who's like the, you know, he's, also he's the CEO of some beauty products, like mega company in the States, in LA. But he's written like 10 svarim already of his own. He's a very serious Talmud Chacham. And again, he says his goal is to teach people, right, that he learned from his father, that you could be at the level to be a Rosh Yeshiva, but, you know, you can go into business, and that doesn't need to take away from your Torah. Right? So they say, Elazar ben Charsam was the same way. Pam achat, matzu avadav asu bo angaria. So one time, you know, they found him and they Angaria, they tried to make him work for the king. Right? This was like, you know, forced labor. He said, "No, let me go learn." Right? And they said, "We swear by the life of our master, Relazar ben Charsam," which they didn't realize was him, right? Because he just, you know, walked around and he wasn't sitting in his office. That we won't let you. Right? We're going to make you work, right? And we're not going to let you go and learn. They said, "What this proves is that, you know, he was the CEO, right? But he didn't. He wasn't checking too much on his business, right? He let things go so that he'd have some free time to learn Torah." It's forced labor. Right, Angaria. It means slightly different things at different points, right? But it could be for a king, it could be for a powerful person, whatever exactly it's going to be. Forced labor, forced military service, right? It means different things in different contexts, but some sort of forced labor. Okay. Rasha Omrimlo, the evil person, they say to him. Now, this is where it gets sort of sadly comical. Right? Mipnei ma lo asakta b'Torah. Why didn't you learn? So, im amar. So what's the evil person going to say? Which we already said is the odd man out here. Nae ayiti. I was so good looking. Right? I was just so good looking. Right? V'tarud b'yitzri. So what could I do? I was just involved in all types of, pursuits. Yetzer hara pursuits. Because, you know, look, I was just that good looking. Right? I was just busy all the time. Omrimlo klum naya yitam Yosef. So then you say to him, "Were you better looking than Yosef?" Because Amru alav al Yosef at tzaddik. Because they said about Yosef, the righteous one, "Bichol yom vayom haita eshet Potifar mishadalto bidvarim." Every day, the wife of Potifar would try to entice him with words, try to ensnare him. And she would say, "Begadim shalav shalo shacharit lo lav shalo arvit." Whatever she was wearing in the morning, she changed by the evening. Right? Nothing was ever the same. He could never get used to it. "Begadim shalav shalo arvit lo lav shalo shacharit." Whatever she wore at night, she didn't wear during the day. Amralo hashmali, and she would say to him, "Listen to me, right? Let's be together." Amralo lav. He said, "No." Amralo hareni chovashtacha beveda asurin. He says, I will imprison you." Amar la Hashem matir asurim. He'd say, "Okay, great. God frees prisoners." Harini kofeve komatcha. Right? I will cripple you. Right? I'll turn over your stature. Hashem's go gave kufim. Hashem can deal with that too. Harini misamei nech. I'll blind you. Hashem pekeach evrim. Hashem can deal with that one too. Hashem can make me see. Natnalo elef tikare kasef lishmoila. She gave him a fortune of money to listen. Lishkovetzla liyodima velo ratza lishmoila. And he didn't want to listen. Lishkovetzla bolomazet. To lie with her in this world. Liyodima lolomaba. Nimtza. Hillel mechayev et haniyim. Relazar ben Charsam mechayev et ashirim. Yosef mechayev et harishayim. So the upshot of it is that Hillel takes the poor people to task, Relazar ben Charsam takes the wealthy people to task, and Yosef takes the evil people to task. Right? Nikra shemo shem ma'aseh Yosef ha-tzedik, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Elai shema Yosef she'tzivi tzivah la'aznud v'lo shema la'adonav she'etam mefateh oto, and he got his name Yosef ha-tzedik from this story. Right, because he didn't listen to Eshet Potiphar. Okay, so let us analyze this Agada, because it is problematic at many, many levels. Right, the first one, as we've already said, which jumps out at you, is that there is a total lack of parallel between 1 and 2 and 3.
I don't see it as being so problematic.
Okay, why not?
The whole thing I don't see as being problematic, and that, if you think about it, that's not problematic either.
Okay.
Because who do you have in front of the high court, right, so to speak? So who's the one who would be opposite the evil person? The tzaddik. But the tzaddik learned Torah, so he's not there. So the other three people are like your regular Joe, right, who does some good things and does some bad things, but he didn't learn enough Torah. And so who are the three categories? You have the poor person, the rich person, but then of course you also have the evil person because the tzaddik couldn't be there, right? And then for each one you have an answer that I think just, you know, proves the point that no matter what you say, there was always somebody who was poorer than you or richer than you or whatever, that, you know, who found time. Like, basically, like, the bottom line is, like, it's like an embellished story to just say you have to find time. I don't know that.
So that's definitely the right. That's definitely the point of the story. But there's one.
But there's
one subtlety, right? That I think is problematic, because what word should it have said instead of Russia?
Thing.
Right. Baltava. Right. Meaning it shouldn't have said evil. Meaning if the upshot of it is that all these people are unjustified.
Okay.
Right. If all the people are unjustified, then you should say. Right? Right? Then either they're all Rishaim, right? Rishah is a generic term, right? If they're all unjustified, right? This is the final day of judgment, so they should all be Rishaim or something like that. Or you should call them Baal Tava, meaning the first two, right? The word used to describe them isn't the judgment of them. It's the excuse that they have that led them to do that which was wrong. Right? But the third stage jumps the gun, right? It jumps and it says Rasha. Right, not Baal Tava. If it had said Baal Tava,
which means
someone who has desires, right, that would have made a lot of sense. Right, a poor person, a rich person, and a person who is overcome by desire, or a person who's really good looking and therefore is subject to all desires, it would have made perfect sense. Right, the one subtlety, right, that really makes you think in the story is that judgment, right?
Yeah, but that means somebody would have written somebody off, like I'm poor. So I'm writing off the fact that I can't learn. I'm born evil. I'm writing myself
perfect.
Off.
Perfect. Who wrote him off?
He writes himself off.
Exactly. Right. I think that's the key to the Agadah. Right? Because think about it. Right? If you come before God, someone comes before God and he says, the crime at stake is you didn't learn Torah. Okay? Right? So, imagine, you know, before we get to the Gemara, let's imagine a court scene, right? Okay, so, someone comes in, easy, okay? You didn't file your taxes, tax evasion, okay? Someone comes in and he says, look, I'm sorry, but you know what? I was scraping together a living. I can't figure out the tax code. I didn't have money to pay H&R Block. Right, I just didn't have the money. I wasn't trying to evade taxes. I literally did not know how to file. Right, so the judge will say, you know, either he'll say that's a good excuse, it's not a good excuse, but I understand what he says. Someone else comes in and says, "Look, I really meant to, right? But I'm not trying to evade taxes. I'm happy to pay it now, right? But like, look, I was just busy. I was a CEO. I was so busy. My accountant, you know, my accountant quit during tax season. I just didn't have time to fund another one." He'll take it. He'll leave it. Third guy comes in and he says, look, I just didn't have time. I was in the middle of committing a murder. I didn't have time.
But he's not
saying
that.
Right?
But it's actually not that. Because
well, right, what does he say? He says, right, Tarud B'Yitzri. He says, you didn't learn Torah, and his response is...
The evil person in the Agadah is not an evil person by the way we would define evil. They're not saying it's a murder. It's actually somebody who is making up an excuse why they didn't learn. A real Russia would look there and say, I don't need an excuse. I don't care. I didn't want to. I didn't. No. This guy is making up an excuse, and he's saying, well, I was just too beautiful. Meaning, like, there was something. He has to make an excuse to justify it to himself. So he's better than a Russia.
Exactly.
Would explain.
And that's comes back. Sorry, what's your name?
Marcy.
What Marcy points out, I think, is the key, right, is that you're right. Right? He doesn't sound like a Russia, right? He's saying, look, I didn't mean to. But I was, you know, overcome by desire, but he's looking for an excuse, right?
But he still wants an excuse. A real
right, and I think...
He apologizes.
Right, and he's apologizing, and I think the key to understanding the story is that one little subtlety, is that, so then who named him the Russia? And the answer is himself, right? And here's what I want to explore.
Why? It's a responsibility.
But why, right, and why? Right? And here's the key.
You call yourself a Rasha. It says God made me a Rasha, and therefore...
And why does he think he's a Rasha? Well, let's work backwards, logically. Why does he think, right?
He couldn't overcome his own inclination to...
Well, I think it's even more than that, right? He couldn't...
looking.
He couldn't overcome it, and therefore what? Right?
It's an excuse. He's giving himself the act.
And what's the excuse? Let's try to pin down.
He was born with it.
He was born with what?
God gave him this problem.
So he
right?
becomes a
Yeah, he's blaming God, and what does he think? What does he think?
That he no longer has the personal choice to learn Torah.
And yeah, and he thinks, and what is, and what, but what flaw does he see? It's God's fault. But what is it? What's the flaw he sees in himself? Admittedly, he blames it on God. But what's the flaw? What does he see in himself that's problematic? Why does he deem himself a Rasha?
Because he didn't care enough.
What does he say? Taruda iti beitzri. What does he think? Right, it's the desire itself that he sees as evil. Right, meaning he blames God because he said, "You made me desirous, and didn't that make me evil?" So it's your fault, right? That's the subtlety, I think, that the whole Agadah hangs on, because nobody thinks that being poor makes you evil, and nobody thinks that being rich makes you evil. But people do think that having the desire to be involved in sin, specifically sexual sins, right? But really any sin, right? People have this belief that people who are deep down want to do things wrong, that's a moral problem, right? But it's not actually true, right? It's a subtle mistake, but it's a critical one.
Wow.
Because it's not true, right? If you have the desire to do wrong, that doesn't make you evil,
right?
In fact, what does it make you?
Human.
It makes you human. And, right, think about the response of the Gemara. The Gemara says, so what does the Gemara say? What? Right? Right, and what does the Gemara say? What's the response to a person like that? Right, it's a very carefully crafted response. Right, there's a response to a person like that.
It's with pain.
What?
The desire and crouching up and doing.
Well, the response is Yosef.
Right, why Yosef? Why Yosef?
Listen, Yosef is torn.
And he's torn, and what do we call him?
Overcame
it. Hatzadik. And why do we call him a tzadik? Because of this moment, right? Meaning the Gemara says, what's the response? The response is, no, you misunderstand it. Right? The fact that you have desire doesn't make you evil. On the contrary, if you have desire and you manage to overcome it, that is the paradigm of tzidkut. Right? You wrote yourself off one step too early. You didn't realize that at your fingertips was greatness. Right? What you defined as evil was just humanity. But potential for greatness, but you ran away from it. But right, that's why Yosef becomes the paradigm. Why? Let me just look at the Midrash and quickly. Right, in the Yalkut, you have the same thing, but slightly different. Rasham rim lo mipnei malo asakta b'torah. Amar na'ev b'torah b'yitzri ayiti. Amrim lo klum ayiti yefek tawar yoter mi Yosef atzadik. Right, so here, right, it adds the pasuk. It just notes, right? It's not just, right, yafeh. Right, there's a key there. It's Yafei Tawar. What's Yafei Tawar?
Beautiful.
Right, it wasn't just like beautiful. It was
attractive.
It's attractive, and there's something very subtle here. You have to know Tanakh well to catch it. Yosef is the only
objective.
It's objective, and
male.
Yosef is the only
male
to be called Yafei Tawar anywhere. Right, it's not just Yafeh. Right, he's the only male in all of Tanakh to be Yafei Tawar. Right, he's. Parenthetically, why is he a Fetawar? Why is he described as... Why is he the only male? Because his mother, right? Clearly, the parallel there is meant to be that he's like Rachel, right? Who's a Fetawar as well. But it's not just he was beautiful, right? He was uniquely beautiful. He was the only male of that stature of beauty in all of Tanakh, right? It's standalone, right?
And see, it was objective. It wasn't...
Right, it was objective. It was, there was no... Right, there's no denying what happened. There's no denying that people wanted him, right? Eshet Potifar, right, this wasn't like he thought he was beautiful. The Torah calls him beautiful. Eshet Potifar acted on that. Yeah.
Okay, so what I was saying about that when Hashem says to Cain, so my scratching at your door, but you overcome it, that's what this is.
Yeah, exactly, right? That, I think, is... Right, that's the key. He's saying, yeah, I get you have Yetzer Hara. That's not the point. That's not equivalent with Rasha. On the contrary. Now, right? Now, Abraham Lincoln has a nice way of putting it. You could either read it in Chazal, you could read it in Abe Lincoln, so I gave you both, right? The Gemara in Sukkah just says it very simply. Kol gadol mechaveiro yitzro gadol haimenu. Right? In fact, it's almost definitional. The greater you are, the greater your desires for anything, right? Or as Abe Lincoln put it, people who have no vices have very few virtues, right? Meaning, right, the greatest people have, right? And we know this is true, right? Meaning, people...
Right. It's also the same concept as Gadol HaMitzvah, we have something that's...
Right, and I mean that's how Tosfot right takes it, right? That the more responsibility you have, the more worried, the harder it gets, right? But the way you know the Gemara puts it, or Lincoln puts it, right?
Wait, what is the Gemara saying?
The Gemara says, "Kol gadol mechaveiro yitzro gadol imenu." The greater you are, the greater your yitzer hara, right?
But that's not what Abraham Lincoln
said. No, he doesn't say exactly the same, right? But he's saying
the virtues versus the
vices, right?
How but, they act on it.
Correct. But they're getting it, right? They're getting at the same... Right? They're getting at a similar point,
no,
right?
No, you're saying that somebody right? who has... It's the flip of it. If you have no desires, then you also have no futures. You're an empty
right, meaning...
Person.
Look, if
how
you have...
How great can you be if you have no desires?
You know, if you have drive, right? Drive can lead to the desire to lead or the desire to you know... subject others to your will, right? Those are very subtle.
Well, David HaMelech, the Chazal explained yeah. to somebody who had so many, like, he's described the same as Esav, with, you know, the red hair, the red everything. Esav took it to the bad, he took it to the good.
Right, now, and there are many Agadot that play on this, right? If someone is born under the, right, the star, right, the Mazal of right, of Mars, of Aries, right? So then he can either be a murderer or he can be a Mohel. Right, meaning, but often, right, the same... personality traits that lead to potential greatness are the most dangerous ones, right? Look, people who...
Right.
We know this. We do this all the time, right? People who just don't care about having any human interaction whatsoever, right, are very, very unlikely to abuse anybody. They're also very unlikely to do anything nice for somebody. People who really care and really build close relationships, right... We know, unfortunately, right, those are the people either make great leaders, teachers, politicians, right, who really care about people, but they also are the, all the cases that make, right, make it to the news of people who are involved in abuse of all type, right, it's the same, right, the charisma, the ability to build relationships, the ability to inspire, right, it's the same thing. You can't be great without having dangerous, right, personality traits, you just can't, right?
It's all throughout literature.
Yes,
like,
for sure.
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, he says, like, every nemesis is, right, is
exactly, right? Or, you know, I had a roommate who always loved quoting it. It was his yearbook quote,
great power,
right?
Great responsibility. I'm sorry.
Yes, it's Spider-Man. It's Harry Potter, right? Right? Dumbledore has this moment where he says to Harry, right? It is, right? It is our choices, Harry.
Right.
Yes, exactly. Right. So that was my college roommate's yearbook quote when we were in high school. Right. It's a good quote. It's a good quote, David. I've used it in Divrei Torah before. Like, but it's a good one. Yeah.
My husband once gave this Bar Torah about the trump in the Yosef story, and there's a certain trump that goes like up.
Bait Mama.
Right, and it's
right, and that's
he
the
that it's
he's
like
way
the,
back and right.
It's the Shalshelet, exactly. Right, it's the
should I stay? Should I go? Shalshelet?
Right, that he hesitates, exactly. Right, and
so
you
that
see it. Exactly, right? He didn't, it wasn't easy. If it was easy, big deal. Right, the point is, it's specifically because it's hard. Right, that's the point. That's what makes tzidkut. And the problem was that, what was this guy's excuse? Was that he wrote himself off because he had desire. What he didn't realize is that desire doesn't make you evil. Desire gives
like
you challenges.
And God ate it. Like, you know,
yeah.
It's like worse. You can't even touch the tree. You know,
right,
if you touch it, it's bad. You have the desire, it's bad. Like,
exactly, right. It's any time we do that. It's any time we jump. Right? It's any time we see the challenge and assume, you know, if I was perfect, I wouldn't even have the challenge. Right? And then we give up. Right? If I want to do it wrong, I'm already there. Right? And the answer is no. That's not the point. But it's so easy.
But the Torah
right?
then describes it in the wrong way by calling him Yosef HaTzadik.
So the Torah never, right.
So whoever called him Yosef HaTzadik maybe should not have called him
No, so that's what the Gemara says, right? That it's, he's called Tzadik on that story. Right? Meaning that's the point. The Gemara says tzaddik doesn't mean you were born perfect. Tzaddik means you overcame. That's what made him a tzaddik.
He was kovesh yitzro.
But that is tzidkut, according to Gemara, right? That's the point. Tzidkut is the ability to overcome, not the lack of...
But that leads the Rasha to think that by him having many desires makes him a Rasha.
That's why the Gemara brings the story, because we know, right, as you point out, right, he did hesitate at that moment, right? That didn't make him evil. Right, because at the end of the day, he made the right decision.
Right,
and what the Chazal have a beautiful way of saying it. Right, Ra'ad Diukno Shel Aviv. Right, he was about to sin, and he saw his father's image. Except, right, what did he really see? Right, what is the pshat in that midrash? Right, the pshat, as one of my Rabbi Bednarz likes saying. Right, the drash on the drash is the pshat of the pshat. Right, is the right or is Omek Pshuto Shel Mikra? What's the drash on that drash? What did he really see?
Reflection.
A reflection. Right, he is Dukno Shel Aviv. We know he looks like his father.
That's Harry Potter too.
Yes, everything's always Harry Potter. It's always Harry Potter. It always comes back to Harry Potter. Everything always comes back to Harry Potter. But he sees himself, right? He sees it within himself that he can do this, right? Because he sees his father in himself. Yes, the mirror of Erised. Wonderful.
Book three, but we'll talk about it later. I'm sorry.
Okay, fine. Okay.
Away from
the Patronus. Oh, the Patronus. Okay. I hear. It's a good fart. It's a good fart. Okay. So now there are even more layers though to this that are I think even more subtle. Because the context of this Gemara is not generic, right? Righteousness versus wickedness. It's Torah, very specifically. Right? And here I think the Gemara is playing on an irony.
On an irony?
An irony. Right? Because let's say someone doesn't have sheer willpower. He can't just overcome his Yitzhar like that, like Yosef. Right? Yosef, okay, he just fought it down. Right? Last moment he almost failed, he didn't, but he just overpowered. Right? What is Chazal's antidote to the Yitzhara when you can't just overpower it? Torah. Right, that's the Gemara's antidote. Right, if you look at 6, the Gemara says, "V'tanu rabbanan v'samtem." Right, you should put the Torah on. Right, etc. So the Gemara plays in it samtem. That is the perfect elixir, the perfect antidote. Nimshala Torah kesam chayim. And then the Gemara says, "Mashal Adam sheikad bino makah gdola v'niach l'riti al makato." It's like a person who hits his son and gives him a Band-Aid. And he says, look, as long as the Band-Aid's on, eat what you want, drink what you want, you can take a shower, don't worry about it. But you take off the Band-Aid, right, then you got to worry about infection. So God says, look, Bini, I gave you the Yetzer Hara. Admittedly, I did give you the... I'm not denying I gave it to you. Remember the Rashi who blames God? He says, look, I'm taking the blame. I did give it to you. I gave you all your problems, all your illnesses. Right? But I gave you the antidote too. Right? I'm not cruel. Right? Or as Chazal say elsewhere, Eina Kadosh Baruch Hu Babitun Yal Briotav. He's not coming to right to mess with his creations. Im Atem Oskim B'Torah, you learn Torah. Eina Atem Nimserim B'Yado. So you won't be given over to the Yetzer Hara. Shneamar. And now we come back to who said it? Who brought up the beast crouches at the door? Who? There you go. Right. So now the Gemara brings it. Where do we know? Haloim Teitiv Se'ed Vim. Right. If you're good, it'll all be fine. V'meina demos kim b'torah. If you don't learn Torah, atem nisarim biado. You'll be given over to the Yetzer Hara shenemar lapetach chatat roveitz, because it's crouching at the door. V'lo'od el shekol maso matano becha shenemar velecha tshukato. Right, and right, the Yetzer Hara is constantly involved with you because right, you are his right desire. V'imata rotzata moshobo shenemar atavim timshabo v'ata timshabo. And if you want, you can conquer him. So what is right? There's another irony here, is that the Gemara says, what's his excuse? I couldn't handle it. God, you gave me a Yetzer Hara. I'm already evil. There's no way out. I can't solve it. I didn't have time to learn Torah. But the Gemara tells you, wait a second. Not only can you overpower it, but that which you were running away from because you thought you were a lost cause, you thought you didn't have time to be involved in Torah because you were too involved in Yetzer Hara, you didn't realize that was the antidote. That's what would have given you the strength to overpower that very Yetzer Hara that was preventing you. Right? So it's not just that the Gemara is saying he wrote himself off. The Gemara is saying, you wrote yourself off and therefore prevented yourself from doing the one thing that would have given you the koach to overcome that evil within yourself. Right? So
does he promise that to the poor person?
Right, he doesn't, right? He does, right?
He doesn't.
Right, exactly. Right, so the poor person, the rich person, he just says, suck it up.
Right.
Right? That's what he says. He says, deal with it. Okay. Right? But the evil person, he says, right? But the problem is the Gemara doesn't tell you that here. Right? In this Gemara, the Gemara just tells you, you know, deal with it. Yosef dealt with it, you can deal with it. But if you have a, right? But if you know other chazals, remember, right? The Radbaz's point, you start piecing it together, right? You'll realize, wait a second, there's a little bit more going on here. Because if it's about Torah, it's not just he wrote himself off too early. It's that he wrote himself off and prevented himself. Right? He actually had a way out. The poor person, the rich person didn't necessarily have a way out. They just had to deal with the difficulty. But the evil, quote-unquote, evil person who was overcome by desire, he had a solution. The solution was what? Torah, which he ran away from because he thought he was a lost cause. Right? He had the solution in his hands. But because he'd written himself off, he didn't engage. Because he didn't engage, he was lost. Right?
But there's no solution for the poor person or the rich person.
No.
The question isn't to the poor person, why weren't you rich?
Correct.
The Torah study doesn't make you poor or rich.
Correct.
Right.
Right.
Why didn't you have time for
exactly, that? And the Gemara says, "Yeah, you know, it's hard. It's right. Right." That's why the Gemara's answer for those two is, "Look, you know, find time. You know, I'm not saying you know you're going to have 10 hours a day,
right?
Right? But find time. Everyone finds yeah. time."
I just
right?
don't like the adjective. Like, I think that if somebody is like a Rasha, then they should. The antidote is to do things that are worthwhile and nice to other people, and not
so.
Meaning, you can say somebody who doesn't learn Torah is, like, pick a different description for tzaddik. Somebody who, like Yosef, he was strong. He was...
Right, so it's purified. So it's interesting, right? It's
why is that
you know,
tzaddik?
So
why,
you know, you might
Gibor.
So, you know, you might want... See, it's interesting. On the one hand, you'd say, look, you're a Rasha, so solve, you know, Rishut with Sidkut. The problem is, right, as we've you know already mentioned, we know that's not really true. Right? I mean, go back to our examples before. Right? The same people who did all types of wonderful things in education, right? Why is it always so hard to get any of these people who are caught for abuse? Because they did a lot of good things in their career, too. Right, that's why you always have people coming to their defense, always people saying, I don't believe that they were involved in abuse. Right? Meaning doing good things is not an antidote to doing bad things. Because people can do good things and bad things at the same time. Right? What is Torah?
It's the instructions.
It's the instructions. Right? Meaning you can't say, look, you're doing bad things, do good things too. You can't make up for one and the other. You can be doing good and bad at the same time. Torah says go back to the beginning, go back to the basics and realize that, right, what's the value of Torah? Why is it, and this is, I think, part of the story, is why is Torah...
Why do you call that Tzidkut?
Well, Tzidkut is simply overpowering.
Strength.
Right, so, why shouldn't that be, right? That's impressive, right? In the Gemara, right, meaning... I think for the Gemara, the reason that Tzidkut is restrained is because not everyone's capable of doing earth-shattering things. But everyone's capable of withholding themselves from their basis instincts, right? The Gemara is telling you, look, you don't need to be a tzaddik. You don't need to be the person who does a million good things, right? If you manage to control yourself, that's already being a tzaddik, right? Obviously, we want you to do good things, right? But tzidkut is managing to control yourself.
I think also the Torah study is the only solution to getting to tzidkut. If you want to become a righteous person, it's not your own decision of what's good and what's bad. Torah gives you those instructions.
Yeah, and I think that's right. And I think that's
study it. The more you can get there. I don't know. That's
yeah, and I think that's you know I think that's definitely part of it, right? Meaning look, there's a reason that the Torah is described as an Eitz HaChaim. Right, the reason it's described as an Eitz HaChaim is to invoke Bereishit, right? To tell you that the Torah is what tells you what's Tov and Ra, right? Because Eitz HaChaim brings you back to the garden, and in the garden there's Tov and Ra, and the only thing that teaches you What is Tov and Ra is the Torah, right? So I think the reason the Gemara, I think, says that the solution to Rishut is Torah and not good deeds is because, look, as Abraham Lincoln says, right, people have no vices and very few virtues, right? Meaning, it's very easy to say that. Look, right, good people do bad things too, but that's not a good, right? We can't just say, oh, that's great, right? Yeah, he did a lot of good things, he did a lot of bad things, big deal, right? He's a tzaddik, right? We don't think that. Right, we know that the people who do the worst things are the people who also did a lot of great things, which is what inspired people and led people to have faith in them and gave them, you know, put them in the place that gave them the power to misuse their power. Mm-hmm. Right? It's only, you know, re-education, so to speak. Right? It's, you know what, you gotta go back to the beginning and realize that, you know, you don't get to choose. You don't get to say, look, I do a bunch of good things, so who cares what bad I do? Right? That's a bad, right? That's bad. What you have to do, the only solution is Torah. The only solution is to go back to the instruction manual, which says, this is good, this is bad. This is good, this is bad. Right? You don't get to gauge for yourself. Right? And I think, I mean, look, I think you're right. We all intuitively jump and say, look, if your problem is evil, so add good to this world. But then we know, right, that realistically that's not enough. Right? All these people have done so much good, right? We don't want to do that. We don't want to whitewash their evil just by saying, hey, you know, right? And it can be people who abuse their power for, you know, to abuse people, right? Sexually or otherwise, right? But it could also be people who say, look, okay, fine. I stole $10 million, so I'll donate $5 million, right? We don't want someone to say, oh, that's good, right? Your solution to your bad is, you know, is do good. We don't even want them to say, okay, I stole $10 million and I'll donate $10 million, right? We're not into Robin Hood, right? We're just, but what we will say is, okay, you want to know what your solution is, right? Solution is sit down, right? Introspect. Here's a guide, here's guidelines, here's what you should do, right? And I think that's why the Torah says that the antidote to evil is Torah, right? It's not just like, this is not like a, I don't think this is a kolel gemara, right? It's not saying, you know, the only solution is Torah, not mitzvot. It's saying that mitzvot aren't a solution because you can do mitzvot and aver at the same time. The only thing that will remind you that just doing mitzvot doesn't give you license to have a bit of vice in there is Torah, which will tell you, you know, you've always got to be working to improve. Like, yes, you may have, you know, vices, but that's not justifiable. Now, parenthetically, I gave you in 7, right, Rashi quotes from Chazal that Yosef, right, for Chazal, this is part of Yosef's life also, right? Even though in the moment, Yosef is seen as someone who just overpowers his desire, the persona of Yosef in, and now this brings us to this week's parsha, is someone who's involved in Torah, right? And Chazal sort of...
Well, he always invokes Hashem.
So that is actually pshat, right? Meaning that he's always talking about God, right? Nechama Leibovitch points out, right? The reason that everyone says, I see that God is with you, she just points out that almost every time he talks, right, God, right? Nechama Leibovitch just points, if you just check every time he's actually engaged in dialogue, right, as Yosef, before he's the viceroy and he's hidden, right? God, 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 God. So God, we know. He's talking God all the time. Midrashically, he's also a Talmud Chacham, right? In number 7, right? Siman Masar Lahem, read this week, he sends Yaakov the Agalot. And Rashi quotes from the Midrash, why does he do this? Because he sent a sign. We told him the Torah he was learning. He was learning Parashat Egla Rufa. He was learning the laws of the Egla Rufa, right? Of the case where someone is killed in between cities, and we don't know who murdered him. So you know the court comes and they break the neck of this heifer in the valley. And so he's making a play on the words, Egla, Egla, and he's hinting to the Talmud Torah he learned to his father. But what you see here is that Chazal, right, consistent with their view, make Yosef out to be a Talmud Chacham, because if he's the type of person who can overpower his desire, it must be that Torah is there. Now, whether they're actually saying he learned Torah, or they're, you know, filling out the picture and saying, if you want to be like Yosef, then you know, Torah will help you, I don't know. Could very easily be the latter. But that's part of the picture they're painting. Now, in number 8, if you turn the page, in Avot Rabbi Natan, the version of this Agadata gets another twist. What should be the lesson from this Agadata, right? What should be the next stage The logical next stage should be?
Always learn Torah.
Well, always learn Torah, and we should see success. But that's what you really want to see, right? The person being described as is a failure, right? I mean, Gemara says the guy could have succeeded had he internalized Yosef's message, but he didn't. In the Avodah Rabbi Natan, it gives you what you want, which is, okay, some people fail, but some people read these three parshiot and actually get the message. So that's what you get in number 8. The Al Titmal Yosef HaTzadik. Don't be so surprised about Yosef HaTzadik, because you know what? There are other people, right? The other people who got this point, who learned this message. Sharei Rebbe Tzadok Haya Gadol Ador. Rabbi Tzadok was the Gadol Ador, and when he was conquered, when he was captured by the Romans, this noble woman took him in and set, and gave him a maid servant. Right, this was standard practice in Rome that, you know, important people, part of the hospitality, thank you, wasn't just food and drink. It was, they sent a girl for the night. So, Kevan Sharauta, Natani Navakoto, Shlo Yirenu. So he looked at the wall. By Yoshev, Vishone, Kola Laila, and he sat all night and he learned. Right? He looked at the wall and learned Torah. Lishachrit, Halcha, Vigvila, Eitzel, Givirta. So that night, in the morning, she went and she complained to her mistress. Amra La Shaveli, Hamavet. She said, I'd rather die than be with this person. It was just so humiliating, right? It was just humiliating, right? I'm there all night, right? And he's just standing at the wall reading, right? Muttering or whatever, right? Just insulting. So this noble woman is intrigued, and she asks, she sends for him. She said, why do you do what every other person does? He said, what am I supposed to do? Mikihuna gedolani, mimishvcha gedolani, right? Look, I'm an important person. I'm a Kohen. I'm from a noble family. Shema avo alever, beitim amzerim b'Yisrael. What am I going to do? This is not, right? This is beneath me, right? It's beneath me. Kevan shema dvarav, tzivta alav vatarda b'kavod gadol. When she heard this, right, that he had enough self-respect, right, to control himself, she says, you know, this is a special person. She sends him away. Right, so the Midrash, as it's portrayed in Avodah Rabbi Natan, takes the next step and says, you know what? It's actually possible. It's not just theoretical. This happens. There are people with such willpower, not only Yosef. There's another level. Another level to this. So I don't know, right? It's a fun play on it, right? I don't know whether his, you know. Another thing here is, I think, what's hidden, which is the Gemara portrays it as there's a rich person, and there's a poor person, and then there's the evil person. And then Yosef is the solution to only one of three. Except, let's think about the last three parshiyot, right? What challenges did Yosef actually have in his life?
Being poor, being rich.
Yeah, being poor at the lowest level of poor, right? Thrown in a pit with his clothes torn off, right? Then thrown back in another pit later on in prison, right? And wealth. There's no one like you except for the king. There's no one greater than you. The only superpower in the world with all the wealth in the world, and he's in charge. Okay, second command, but he's the one actually, he's actually the CEO, right? Okay, whatever, right? Paro's the chairman, but he's the person functioning, right? He's in charge of all the wealth, right? So if you think about it for a second, you realize, wait a second, there's another hidden message here, which is, you know, everyone thinks, right? People think about life very monochromatically, right? In one color, right? My challenges are these challenges, right? And his challenges are that, and her challenges are that, right? And I can handle this challenge, or I can't handle this challenge, right? But I don't even have to worry about that. But that's not how life works either, right?
All rolled up in one.
Exactly. But the Gemara doesn't tell you that, right? The Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara presented as very, very, right, perfectly. Some people, their challenge is wealth. Some people, their challenge is poverty. Some people, their challenge is their Yetzer Hara, right? And either they win or they don't. But the Gemara throws in Yosef. And if you know Tanakh, and you read the last week's parsha, and you think for a second, right, it should click for a moment, wait a second, Yosef succeeds not only with the challenge of Yetzirah, but he succeeds when he's poor, as was mentioned before. He is talking about God when he's in the bottom of the pit. And he's talking about God when he's in the palace. And he's talking about God when he's when that's his solution to the Yetzer Hara. And when he's being threatened with being thrown in jail, if he doesn't engage with Eshet Potiphar, right? He has everything mixed together, right? And he's always God, 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 right? I won't sin to God. I won't sin to God. It's always God. It's God. It's not me. It's God. Yosef, you realize, and this is all of us, we have, right, is our challenges are not the same, right? Sometimes your challenge is poverty, or not actual poverty, right? Sometimes, whatever, you're starting a new job, you're moving to a new place, right? The bills are piling up, you're trying to, you're too busy to do the things that you want to be doing. Sometimes things are great, right? So, thank God you have a good salary. You don't have to worry about the bills. But because you have so much excess money, you put every one of your kids in 3 chugim, right? So your day is driving this one and this one and this one. I don't have time. I just do not have time to deal with it. I have the curse of, right, too much resources, right? I have no time to learn, right? Sometimes it's Yetzirah. Sometimes it's, one thing in the morning, another thing in the afternoon, right? By bringing in Yosef, and this is always the problem, right? You don't want to just tell something. You don't want to just say, people have challenges all the time. Great. That's not going to influence anybody. But what do? You allude to it. You hint to it. You say Yosef. And anybody who knows Yosef, suddenly their mind starts going. And they start realizing, Yosef is pretty good. Yosef really did have a lot of challenges. But you know what? Wait. It wasn't just one challenge. He was poor. He could have, right, you could have just written this Gemara as, Ani Omrim Lo, the poor person you say, were you poorer than Yosef when he was in the pit? The rich person, were you richer than Yosef when he was the most powerful person on the planet? No. And he was with God at every state. But we don't do it because, that also is less effective. It's like, okay, you're not Yosef. Great, I'm not Yosef. Right? Big, very impressive. I'm not Yosef. But by even just by invoking Yosef, I think what it does is it subtly complicates the picture, right? Very subtly. It doesn't tell you, there are people who have every challenge under the sun. But what it does is it reminds you that things aren't as simple as they are presented in the Agadata. But the Agadata pretends that some people are challenged with wealth, and some are challenged with poverty, and some are challenged with the Yetzer Hara. But by bringing in just Yosef's name and invoking Vayeshev and Miketz and Vayigash and Vayechi for that matter, right? Suddenly, right, you remember that life is complicated and there are ups and downs, and sometimes your challenge is one and sometimes your challenge is the other. And you know what? You might have been really good. Some people are really good at the challenge of wealth, right? They're really good at it, right? But they would not be good at the challenge of poverty. Right, so at one stage of life they have wealth, and then things take a turn, and now suddenly they're like, "Look, I learned Torah when I, had the wealth, when I was wealthy, and I had the time, and I had the luxury, but now I'm struggling to make ends meet." Some people are the opposite; they're really good when things are hard. Right, they're good. Right, when they're under pressure, right, they can say, "You know what? I'm not going to be able to make ends meet. Anyways, I'll work as hard as I can, and then I'll stay up an hour at night and I'll learn." Right, but once they're wealthy, right? They forget about the little guy. They forget about what's important. Right? Some people are good at one. Some are good at the other. Right? It's actually very hard to be good at all of them.
But the funny irony of the whole thing is you're not going to get any of this if you don't know Torah.
Yeah.
Right?
Right? And that's correct. And that's the irony in the back of the whole thing. Right? Is that the key to all of it is taking the time to...
You wouldn't even know about this Agadata if you didn't learn Torah to begin with.
Well,
it's
you always hope that someone...
This whole point of the Midrashim is that they're
so weird. Yeah, so you hope people have a little bit of experience. Look, there's this very strange Yerushalmi that I like pulling in here. The Bavli, when it talks about the Ben Sarur Moreh, right, says, why did we kill this poor 13-year-old? Because he's going to run out of his parents' money, and then he's going to steal, and then he's going to kill. So we kill him now. Yamud zakav el yamud chayev. So look, it's unfair, right? We all don't understand it. Drosh v'kabal schar, it never happened. Fine. But at least we sort of get what it's getting at. Okay, he's going to murder, so at least the theoretical crime is commensurate with what we're doing to him. Okay, technicality, we stone him, and he's going to be involved in murder, and murder doesn't get stoning, but okay. The Yerushalmi says he's going to steal from his parents, he'll run out of their money, he's going to steal from other people, then he's going to murder. V'sofo lishkoch et talmudo, yamud zakai v'al yamud chayev. And then he's going to forget his Torah, so we should kill him, right? After murder, right? Like, and, you know, so you look at the Yerushalmi, and you're like, really, that was worse than murder? Right, forgetting your Torah. I mean, look, we take Torah seriously, but really. But I think what Yerushalmi's getting at is, no, right? It's not the Torah itself. It's no matter how bad somebody is, if he has ideals he can go back to, he can come back. But if someone's going to get to the point where they forget, they have no access anymore to ideals, they have no access to basic values, then what hope do you have? Right? Yeah, even, I think according to the Rishonim, they're saying, look, even if he's going to murder, right? So we'll deal with that, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But if we can see now that he's going to get to the point where he's going to erase his connection back to values, and there's going to be no way of re-inspiring him.
Cut off from his people anyway.
Yeah, and there's no way back.
He's spiritually dead.
Yeah, because you're right. All this works only with Torah, right? And I think the key is to understand Torah in the broader sense, right? It doesn't mean, you know, you sit and you learn Daf Yomi, right? It means if you can reconnect to the values of Torah, then you have hope. If you can't, right, then everything becomes harder, right? What gives you the strength to overcome all these challenges is connecting back to values. And that's why this Gemara is not framed as, were you a tzaddik? The Gemara is framed as, did you learn? Right? Did you take time to go back to basics? Right, to involve yourself in values, right, to inculcate yourself with the Torah values or not, because that's the beginning of everything. You're right. If the guy never opens the Sagadah, that's not going to help, right? But you hope, right, that he remembers that maybe his, you know, maybe someone said this in a Dvar Torah in Shul, right, and it resonates 25 years later, right? You hope. Okay, we have a few minutes left, so let me just. I won't get into it, but I gave you. I was worried this might happen, so I gave you a longer piece here, and I'm glad I did. There is a whole other facet to this, which is that this Agadata comes up in the middle of a discussion in Yoma of Avodat Yom Kippurim, specifically the close of the Kohen Gadol. And I gave you a line of it here that Amru Alav Arilzim and Harsim Shatzatelo Imo Ktonet Mishte Ribo Lo Nichu Achava Kohanim Lo Lov Shama Neshanira Kaarum. He was also a Kohen, and his mother had made him this very expensive, fine clothes to wear as a Kohen. But it was so fine that it was basically see-through, right? So he looked naked, so the other Kohanim didn't let him work in the Beit HaMikdash. Dr. Yonatan Feintuch has an article where he notes that in addition to everything we've just said, there's another part to this, which is that this... One of these sort of subtexts in Yoma at this point is that the Kohanim, right? Kohanim is inherited greatness. Torah is meritocracy. And one of the subtexts of Masechet Yoma, the Agadic subtext, is that Talmidei Chachamim are better than Kohanim for that reason. Now, part of that is because a lot of it is polemic against the... Right, all the sectarians who had taken over the Beit HaMikdash and they were dealing with the Ketoret, right? That's right, because there was a dispute on how to bring the Ketoret between the rabbinate, you know, the rabbinate camp and the sectarians, so there's a constant back and forth in Yoma on this point. But part of that is that the Gemara is therefore a bit cynical about Kahuna, right? Not intrinsically, but because, you know, Kahuna, you can be a Kohen. And he notes that one of the sort of broader points that you need to understand here is that Reb Elazar ben Charsom is only presented as righteous when he's presented from his Talmud Chacham perspective, right? But when he's presented as the Kohen, which he also was, right? The Torah, the Gemara critiques him and says, yeah, you know, he was his mother, right? He basically same lines, right, same Gemara. It's immediately before. It is the line before.
This is the rich.
Immediately before, correct. This line is immediately before that Agadah. It's the same page. And he notes that part of the bigger story here, the Gemara is saying, by the way, right, this is Reb Elazar ben Charsom, the Talmud Chacham. But, you know, there are... as the Talmid Chacham Ashir, right? But as the Kohen Ashir, right, we'll critique him. Because the same person, right? The Gemara almost saying that, look, everyone has two parts to the... As a Talmud Chacham, he was great, right? But you know what? He had a little bit of that inherited aristocracy in him also. And from that perspective, he wasn't so good. So the Gemara is continuing its polemic of meritocracy is better than aristocracy, right? Inherited aristocracy within Reuel Zerman Charsim himself. By saying, you know, as a Kohen, we didn't love him so much. And his brother, the other Kohanim, had to say, you know what? It's a bit much, right? The way you dress, that's a bit much here, right?
Well, same with Yosef.
Yes, right? And that, yeah, I mean, right? Yosef also, right, has his moments like that.
His brothers and his...
Yeah, so that's what he points out, right? And that's why I gave you a 9. And he notes, right, that Lozer Mencharsim thing should fill out the Yosef picture. Because now Yosef gets a whole other perspective. Because Yosef is very Lozer Mencharsim-like, right? He has his moments where his clothing causes all his problems, right? Those need to be torn off of him, right? Before he becomes Yosef HaTzadik.
When right? He gets new clothing.
When he gets new clothing, right? And then he can get his clothing back, right? And he says that part of this story is that they're hitting on two people. Reuel Zerman Mencharsim HaKohen, who was problematic, because as the inherited Kohen, right, he felt entitled and he wore his beautiful clothes and he didn't function so well there. But when he moved from Reuel Zerman Mencharsim HaKohen to Reuel Zerman Mencharsim HaTalmid Chacham, right, he worked for his status. Oh, he was great. But that is meant to hint at you, by the way, even Yosef HaTzadik, right, it's not just challenges. You can even have failures and become a tzaddik. Meaning, Yosef really was at the beginning of his life vain. He really was, right, the inherited, right, spoiled son with everything coming to him. He really didn't get it right at the beginning.
But is Rabbi Elazar Charsim described as a Talmud Chacham in this Gemara?
You
know that's up from some other
Gemara. Well, in this, Rebbe would give that away, right? Because it means he has smicha, and smicha was given to very few people. So, he is, and I mean he's the paradigm of someone who learned Torah, right? Meaning in the Gemara he's with Hillel. Right, Hillel is the poor person learning Torah, and he's the rich person. Right, I mean, he's the person in that Gemara. So if he's being compared to Hillel, right, we're talking someone who's a serious Talmud Chacham. So Dr. Yonatan Feintuch points out that there's this, right, that this is, right, sort of the local thing. But once you expand the vision to the Perek, you realize that there's a whole another level going on here. With the Gemara saying, you know what, even within the same person, when they function like Kohanim, right, when they function as if it's Magia Lahem, right, that doesn't usually work out right. It didn't work out with Reuel Zerman Mencharsim, it didn't work out with Yosef. But when they started becoming the Talmud Chacham side of them, meaning the people who had to earn it, whoa, Reuel Zerman Mencharsim was great. And whoa, Yosef was great once he managed to leave that Na'arut behind, right? It may have been a hard journey, right? But the Gemara is reinforcing our hope, right? Saying not only are you not evil if you had challenges, you're not even evil if you made mistakes. Reuel Zerman Mencharsim made mistakes. Yosef made mistakes. So what? So people make mistakes. People fail. That doesn't mean you can't succeed next time. Doesn't mean you can't succeed when the stakes are higher. Right? So you failed. Big deal. Right? And that's, we don't have time to get into it extensively, but Dr. Feintuch argues that that's the, right, once you've finished learning the internal Agadah, you have to then sort of pan out and realize what's going on in the entire Masechet Yoma, where the Gemara is saying, look, you know, there's these Kohanim. They're great, right? Avot Yom Kippurim, Kohen in the Beit HaMikdash, and the Kodesh Kodashim and Yom Kippur, that's wonderful. But on the other hand, the notion of inherited status can be very dangerous. And that's why Talmid Chacham is always safer, because it, by definition, is someone who's earned it. You can't just inherit being a Talmud Chacham. You can be given some certain, you can give it advantages, but you can't become a Talmud Chacham without a little bit of internal effort. And by throwing in Reuel Zerman Mencharsim and Yosef, right, the Gemara drives that point home. It says Reuel Zerman Mencharsim had his, you know, spoiled moments. You know? That doesn't stop him from being the paradigm of the person who, once he decides to be a Talmud Chacham, represents what you can achieve no matter how much, you know, no matter how good things are for you, right? No matter how easy your life is, you can challenge yourself, right? You can avoid living the easy life and actually struggle. And Yosef too, right? But again, this is one of those keys in Agadah.
So the
Agadah,
the point is depends on yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly the point, right? But and I think this is a good way to end. So why doesn't the Gemara just say the key to life is, you know, struggling, right? You can do everything, right? Why doesn't it just say that? Why does it allude to it, hint to it, right? Create these parallelism, hint to the Yosef story. Because that's, exactly. Because if you tell someone, right, cliches are very hard, right? You can say, you know, it's all about our choices, Harry, right? That's very nice, and it's a great quote from Harry Potter, right? But if you read the books, right, and you get involved in it, right, it moves you more, right? And that's exactly the point. It's not going to say, you know what? It's all up to you, and end it. What does it do? It hints. It hints at Elazar ben Charsom. It hints at the whole Yosef story, right? Because it reminds you, you know what? Because it doesn't want to tell you straight out. If it tells you straight out, you brush it off as a cliche. If it hints at it, and you even have to take a few moments to say, you know what? This reminds me of, right? Now you've made the association. The second you made the association, you say, you know what? I can do it because, hey, Yosef did it. And look at his story from last week, 2 weeks ago, this week, next week, right? The second you have to struggle for a second intellectually, right? It sinks in, right? Because you made that jump. You came to that decision. And I think that's always the key in Agadah, right? That even if it's not so hard to uncover the layers, right? The very fact that it makes you peel away the layers to get to what maybe could be boiled down to a cliche at the end, right? Is what makes it powerful, is what gets you involved in the process, right? And that's what makes it dig in emotionally. That's what makes, right? That's what makes it real. That's what gives you the strength. Because people, right? Why is it that with, you know, great responsibility, right? With great power comes great responsibility. Why does that inspire people? That inspires people if they remember, right? Spider-Man, not if they that line alone wouldn't do it. But the fact that, you know, they remember the inspiration of Spider-Man, right? So it helps. If you throw out Yosef, right? You could throw out a cliche, but if you, right? If it makes someone think about the whole Yosef story, right? It's much more powerful. Yeah.
The way the Yosef's character evolves, he's actually stripped of his clothing twice. He first by the brothers and then by Eshet Potiphar, but then it says Vayazov Bigdo, like he does it. It's his choice at that point. First time the brothers forced him. The second time that was his choice.
Correct. So he actually has three. Right? And we'll end with this, exactly, right? This is actually the progression, right? First, he's stripped of it against his will. The second time, he's stripped of it of his own free will. And the third time, he's stripped of it in order to be given back his royal clothing, right? That's the end, right? Because that's Yosef's progression. And yes, you can follow the progression of Yosef's life by following how his clothes are being taken off and who's giving him his clothes back, right? That's actually very much part of the Yosef story, and that's the drama of Miketz, right? Is that his clothes are taken off and he's given new clothes and he's, you know, he becomes the favorite again, right? But this time
Avreich,
which is my father the king,
right?
Right, or father of kings, right? That whole, right? It's right, Rabbi Foreman has a nice piece on this where he notes that that's really Yosef's challenge, is that he seems, the closed stories seem to hint at the fact that Yosef gets readopted by Paro in Miketz, and the question is, despite the fact that he's readopted by Paro, is he going to remain the son of Yaakov? Right, and that's the drama in Vayigash, right, is that in Vayigash, right, he still says, Ha'od Avichai, despite the fact that Paro has adopted him, right, his father is still Yaakov. Right, but you can trace the drama with the clothes and the pits. Right, the pits and the clothes are always the drama.
Right.
There you go. Now we have a few different Torah for the Shabbos table. Right, that's why I want to talk about Yosef. Good.